moment from Kansas City, Missouri. From Kansas City, Missouri, the combined facilities of the radio and television networks present an address by former President Harry S. Truman. Mr. Truman.
My fellow citizens, I am here tonight to set the record straight. I am glad that I am able to do this on Missouri soil by direct communication with so many of my fellow Americans. Missouri is the show me state. Well, I'll show you the truth. On November the 6th, the new administration, through Herbert Brownell, Jr., a former chairman of the Republican National Committee, now serving as Attorney General, made a personal attack on me. Brownell made this attack in the course of a political speech before a luncheon club in Chicago. This attack is without parallel, I believe, in the history of our country. I have been accused, in effect, of knowingly betraying the security of the United States. This charge is, of course, a falsehood. And the man who made it had every reason to know it is a falsehood. On Tuesday, November the 10th, as a direct result of this charge, I was served with a subpoena of the House Committee on Un-American Activities, which called on me to appear before it to be questioned about my conduct of the office of President of the United States. First, I would like to tell you, the people of America, why I declined to appear before that committee. On the surface, it might seem to be an easy thing to do, and smart politics for Harry Truman, a private citizen of Independence, Missouri, to use the committee as a forum to answer the scurrilous of charges which have been made against it. Many people urged me to do that. It was an attractive suggestion and appealed to me. But if I had done it, I would have been a party with the committee to an action which would have undermined the constitutional position of the President of the Office of the President of the United States. The separation and balance of powers between the three independent branches of the government is fundamental in our constitutional form of government. A congressional committee may not compel the attendance of a president of the United States while he is in office to inquire into matters pertaining to the performance of his official duties. If the constitutional principle were otherwise, the office of the president would not be independent. It is just as important to the independence of the executive that the actions of the president should not be subjected to the questioning by the Congress after he has completed his term of office, as that his actions should not be questioned while he is serving as president. In either case, the office of president would be dominated by the Congress, and the presidency might become a mere appendage of Congress. When I became president, I took an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. I am still bound by that oath and will be as long as I live. While I was in office, I lived up to that oath. And I believe I passed on to my successor the great office of President of the United States with its integrity and independence unimpaired. Now that I have laid down the heavy burdens of that office, I do not propose to take any step which would violate that oath or which would in any way lead to encroachments on the independence of that great office. Well, so much for the committee. Now for the charge which Mr. Brownell made in his political speech, a charge that I knowingly betrayed the security of the United States. Let me read to you what Mr. Brownell said. He said, and I quote, "Harry Dexter White was known to be a communist spy by the very people who appointed him to the most sensitive and important position he ever held in the government service." That's the end of the quote. There can't be any doubt that Mr. Brownell was talking about me. Now let me talk about Mr. Brownell and this phony charge he's made. His charge is false. And Mr. Brownell must have known it was false at the third time he was making it. Mr. Brownell has made a great show of detail as to the date on which particular FBI reports were forwarded by the Department of Justice and the manner in which they were handled. As Mr. Brownell should have learned by this time, a great many documents passed daily through the White House. It is not possible to recall 8 years later the precise day or the precise document which may have been brought to the attention of the president. In fact, when Mr. Brownell first made his charges, I was unable to remember the precise document to which he referred, just as President Eisenhower was unable to remember that he had met with Harry Dexter White and Secretary of the Treasury Morgenthau in 1944. But of course I knew of the intensive investigation of communist activity which was then going on and which involved many persons. As a matter of fact, this investigation was one of many important steps which my administration took beginning in 1945 to render the communist conspiracy ineffective in this country. Those steps included the successful prosecution and imprisonment of the top communist leaders in the United States. I believe that the American people are entitled to know the facts, not just the misleading statements that this present administration finds it politically expedient to make. I've had my files examined and have consulted with some of my colleagues who worked with me on this matter during my term of office. The facts, as I have determined them in this manner, are these. In late 1945, the FBI was engaged in a secret investigation of subversive activities in this country. In this investigation, the FBI was making an intensive effort to verify and corroborate certain accusations of espionage made by confidential informants. A lengthy FBI report on this matter was sent to the White House in December 1945. The report contained many names of persons in and out of government service, concerning whom there were then unverified accusations. Among the many names mentioned, I now find, was that of Harry Dexter White, who had been in the Treasury Department for many years, and who was at that time an Assistant Secretary of the Treasury. As best I can now determine, I first learned of the accusations against White early in February 1946, when an FBI report specifically discussing activities of Harry Dexter White was brought to my attention. The February report was delivered to me by General Vaughn and was also brought to my personal attention by Secretary of State Burns. This report showed that serious accusations had been made against White, but it pointed out that it would be practically impossible to prove these charges with the evidence then at hand. Immediately after the matter was brought to my attention, I sent a copy of the report with a covering note signed by me to White's immediate superior, the Secretary of the Treasury, Fred Vinson. In this note, dated February the 6th, 1946, I said, "I am enclosing you a memorandum from the Secretary of State, which came to me this morning. I suggest that you read it, keeping it entirely confidential, and then I think you, the Secretary of State, and myself should discuss the situation and find out what we should do." That's the end of the quotation from my note to Mr. Vinson. Later, I believe it was the same day, I discussed the matter with Secretary Vinson as well as with Secretary Burns. As I have mentioned, Mr. White was, at that time, an assistant secretary of the Treasury. It had been planned for some time that he should be transferred from that position to be the United States member on the board of executive directors of the International Monetary Fund, a new international organization then in process of being set up. His appointment had been sent to the Senate for the new position, and it was confirmed on February the 6th, shortly before I saw Secretaries Burns and Vinson. And in this situation, I requested Secretary Vinson to consult with the appropriate officials of the government and come back to me with recommendations. Secretary of the Treasury Vinson consulted with Attorney General Tom Clark and other government officials. When the results of these consultations were reported to me, the conclusion was reached that the appointment should be allowed to take its normal course. The final responsibility for this decision was, of course, mine. The reason for this decision was that the charges which had been made to the FBI against Mr. White also involved many other persons. Hundreds of FBI agents were engaged in investigating the charges against all those who had been accused. It was of great importance to the nation that this investigation be continued in order to prove or disprove these charges and to determine if still other persons were implicated. Any unusual action with respect to Mr. White's appointment might well have alerted all the persons involved to the fact that the investigation was underway and thus endanger the success of the investigation. It was originally planned that the United States would support Mr. White for election to the top managerial position in the International Monetary Fund, that of managing director, a more important post than that of member of the Board of Executive Directors. But following the receipt of the FBI report and the consultations with members of my cabinet, it was decided that he would be limited to membership on the board of directors. With his duties thus restricted, he would be subject to the supervision of the Secretary of State, and his position would be less important and much less sensitive, if it were sensitive at all, than the position then held by him as Assistant Secretary of the Treasury. Tonight, I want the American people to understand that the course we took protected the public interest and security, and at the same time permitted the intensive FBI investigation then in progress to go forward. No other course could have served both these purposes. The appointment was accordingly allowed to go through, and the investigation continued. And in 1947, the results of the investigation up to that time were laid before the federal grand jury in New York by the Department of Justice. Mr. White was one of the witnesses called before the grand jury. The grand jury did not indict Mr. White, although it was the same grand jury which indicted the 12 top communists in the country. All this was done in the American way, by due process of law. In the meantime, Mr. White, in April 1947, resigned his office, referring to reasons of health. Although my recent offhand comment concerning his resignation was an error, the fact is that he was separated from the government service promptly when the necessity for secrecy concerning the intensive investigation by the FBI came to an end. He died in 1948 after appearing before the Un-American Activities Committee of the House. Thus, what this new administration has attempted becomes clear. It has distorted the decision that enables an investigation of great importance to proceed, as it did, unembarrassed, and with ample safeguards to the public interest I say this decision has been distorted into an alleged harboring of communists. This is shameful demagoguery. It's worse than that. Herbert Brownell, Jr., the Attorney General of the United States, the highest legal officer in our government, has degraded the highest function of government, the administration of justice, into cheap political trickery. He's made the Justice Department headquarters for political skullduggery. The Attorney General of the United States has not only degraded his office, he has deceived his chief as to what he proposed to do. An insane Harry Dexter White was known to be a communist spy by the very people who appointed him. He lied to the American people.